Well, let me start by reading you one of the finest examples there is of tragedy in the whole of English literature. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. Now, I hope you enjoyed that literary masterpiece, but I guess once I started the story, you knew exactly what was going to happen. We've heard Humpty Dumpty read so many times, haven't we? We know the exact details of the storyline. We know that the end scene is going to be full of tragedy, of pathos, as all the king's men, all the king's horses, they fail to put Humpty together again. We know what happened. We know it all too well. So we never ask why it happened. Why did Humpty fall in the first place? Did someone push him? Or did he fall of his own accord? Was it an accident or a case of foul play? Had Humpty had one too many Big Macs at McDonald's and the wall simply collapsed under his considerable weight? Was there an attractive girl walking past and Humpty leant forward to wolf whistle and, oh dear, he slipped off the wall and rather embarrassed himself? We know what happened. Humpty fell off the wall. But as a result, we never ask why it happened. And the same can be said with our reading today. We know it so well. We've been reminded of it even more this year with Mel Gibson's film. We know it so well. We can picture Luke 23, verse 26. Do turn back there if you've closed it. Page 1060. It'd be great if you could do that. Page 1060. Luke 23, verse 26. We know it so well. Simon of Cyrene, he's carrying Jesus' cross to the place of execution. We can picture verses 32 and 33. These two other criminals crucified either side of Jesus. One on the right, the other on the left. We know the scene so well. The crucifixion. We know what happened. But do we know why it happened? Not how, but why did Jesus die? That is what we need to grasp. And it's far more important. Not so much the mechanics of Jesus' death, but the motive, the meaning. You see, the question that was going all round the cross that day, it seemed to be this: if Jesus is the Messiah, if he is the Christ, the promised King, God come to earth, if he is all those things, then why on earth didn't he save himself? Why didn't he save himself? Do you notice that that question, it keeps on coming up? Look at verse 35. Verse 35, the people stood watching. And the rulers even sneered at him. They said, he saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one. Look on to verse 37. This time it's the soldiers. If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. Look on to verse 39. Yet again, one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. Surely these spectators reckon, surely if this guy on the cross is really the Christ, if he really is the chosen one, well, he'd save himself. Why doesn't he save himself? Or is he really just a regular guy whose life took a rather drastic turn for the worse at the age of 33? Think of those brave firemen who died on September the 11th, 2001. Why didn't they save themselves? Well, we know the answer to that, don't we? Those firemen, they rushed into the Twin Towers to save other people, to rescue others, to bring others out to safety. Those firemen, they didn't save themselves because they were out to save others. They died to try and help others live. And it's similar with what's going on here with Jesus. He died so that others could live. He died to save others. That was the choice for Jesus. Save himself or save others. That was the choice for him. Now, something out of the ordinary, it certainly seems to be happening as Jesus dies, doesn't it? We only need to look at verse 44 to see that. Verse 44, the bottom of the page. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour, for the sun stopped shining. At midday, suddenly there is darkness for three whole hours. It's no solar eclipse. Darkness. It is a sign of God's anger at sin. And yet verse 45 continues that the curtain of the temple was torn in two. This partition in the temple, which has separated sinful humans from a holy God, it is symbolically removed, torn in two from top to bottom. The gates of God, they are flung wide open. The way into God's presence is now made possible for humans through Jesus' death. It is a sign of God's acceptance. So we've got God's anger at sin and God's acceptance of sinful humans at the same time. How can that be? The Apostle Peter, he summarizes it very well in his first letter, 1 Peter 3:18. You'll see it up there. For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. So you've got righteous, sinless Jesus, just like the centurion says in verse 47. And then you've got unrighteous, sinful humans like you and me. So you'd expect, wouldn't you? You'd expect to find God's acceptance on righteous Jesus and God's anger on unrighteous humans. That's what you'd expect. Yet what is going on at the cross? It is a simple swap. A righteous Jesus should know God's acceptance. Unrighteous us should know God's anger. Yet on the cross, God's anger is directed at righteous Jesus so that we can know God's acceptance. It is a simple swap. God's anger on Jesus, so we can know God's acceptance. For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous swapping for the unrighteous to bring you to God. That's what he did for us. That's why Good Friday really is Good Friday. It's when Jesus took upon himself God's anger at our sin. Jesus' choice was save himself or save others. He could have saved himself. He could easily have come down from the cross. This is the man who had calmed the storm. He'd healed the sick. He'd cast out demons. He's fed the 5,000. He's raised people from the dead. This man is God come to earth. He could have saved himself and come down from the cross easily. But he didn't. Why? Because he chose to save others. That was the choice for Jesus. But what about the choice for us? What about the choice for us? How will we respond to Jesus? Will we accept him as our king, or will we reject him as our king? I don't know if you noticed that, but throughout the reading, there's this contrast between the way people respond to Jesus. So you've got the contrast between the soldiers. You've got the ones in verses 36 and 37, they're mocking Jesus. And then you've got the centurion in verse 47. Surely this is a righteous man. You've got the contrast between the crowd in verse 48. If you look at verse 48, they beat their breast and then they just go away. With the crowd in verse 49, who knew Jesus, who stood at a distance and remained watching him. But the contrast is most obvious between those two criminals that are being crucified either side of Jesus. Let's just remind ourselves of that bit. Let me just read from verse 39. Do follow, if you will. Verse 39. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said, since you're under the same sentence. We're punished justly, for we're getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth. Today you will be with me in paradise. Now it often happens, doesn't it? You get two people, they're in the same situation, and they act very differently. I remember a while back going for a drink with Susanna, my wife, to meet a friend of ours in Covent Garden. So we got in the car, we drove to Covent Garden, we parked the car, we went for a drink, came back about an hour later, to the car to find that the car had been clamped. So you've got two people, Susanna and I, in the same situation, the car clamped. And all I'm telling you is that we reacted in very different ways. Now, I don't think it'd be very edifying for me to go into all the details. Suffice it to say, I do have a few things to learn from my wife about not losing my temper when things go wrong. But it's exactly the same in this passage here. We've also got two different people, two criminals, in the same situation. They're both being crucified next to Jesus. But they acted very differently. But why? What was the difference? Why was it that one of the criminals died to be with Jesus in heaven and the other one died an unforgiven sinner? What was the difference? Well, it was because the forgiven criminal, he does three things. Three things. Firstly, he fears God. Have a look at verse 40, if you will. Verse 40. But the other criminal rebuked him, the first criminal. Don't you fear God, he said. You see, he recognized God for who God is. As a holy God who justly and rightly judges all wickedness. And a loving God who loves us so much he sent his only son to die on the cross to pay for our sin. He recognizes God for who God is. So this criminal, he's got a correct view of who God is. But he's also got a correct view of himself, of who he is. He's got a correct view of himself because, secondly, he admits his guilt. Have a look at verse 41 and how he continues. He says, we're punished justly, for we're getting what our deeds deserve. He recognizes that he has done things wrong which deserve punishment. He sees himself for who he really is, as a man about to die, a God-forsaken death. He knows that there is nothing he can do to save himself from this. Absolutely nothing. So he does the one thing that he can do. The third action. He turns to King Jesus. Verse 42. Then he, the second criminal, said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. This criminal, he could see with his eyes, through his sweat, through his tears of agony. He could see another man dying on a cross next to him. That is all he could see. A man dying on a cross, so very weak, so very pathetic. That's all he could see. And yet he says, in effect, King Jesus, remember me. He speaks of this resurrected king. You can imagine the agony this criminal must have faced as he waited for the reply to come from Jesus. As he looked across his blood-drenched arm at Jesus, what was Jesus going to say to him? No, sorry, mate, I'm not going to remember you. You're getting what your deeds deserve. I'm innocent. What was Jesus going to say to him? Mate, we're both stuffed. We're just about to die. I can't help you. I've no idea what happens the other side of the grave. What was Jesus going to say to him? None of those two things, of course. Quite simply, he says the words this criminal most wanted to hear. Verse 43, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. Now maybe you've come here this lunchtime thinking that you're worthless, thinking that you don't have anything to offer God. That maybe you think you're too bad for God, that you've done too many things wrong in your life. Well, you can't have less to offer God than this criminal. You can't have less to offer him than this criminal. Yet you too can say, King Jesus, remember me. And he will do just that. But what you might find harder to believe is that we don't have more to offer God than this criminal. If you're thinking you're good enough for God, then I'm afraid you're wrong. You're saying that Jesus didn't need to die, that the cross, it might as well have been empty. The truth is that you and I, we have nothing to offer God except our own sinfulness from which we need rescuing. There was this notice in a church parish magazine. Parishioners are requested to cut the grass around their own graves. Now, it makes us smile, doesn't it? Because we know that death is definite and irreversible. We can't come back to Earth and do a little bit of mowing and pruning around our own grave plot. Not even Alan Titchmarsh will be able to do that. And yet, as much as we fear talking seriously about death, we have to face up to the fact that we will all die. As George Bernard Shaw famously said, it's the ultimate statistic. One out of one dies. Well, what would you most like God to say to you on the day you die? What would you most like God to say to you on the day you die? I don't think there is anything better that we could hope for than to hear God say, verse 43, to us, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. Will Jesus say that to you on the day you die? If you're like the first criminal, rejecting Jesus, rejecting him either in outright hostility or just apathetic indifference, then he won't be saying that to you. If that's you, then you do need to worry about the day that you die. Indeed, that's what Jesus warns us all about at the start of our reading today. You see, there was quite a crowd who were following the proceedings of that day of the crucifixion. And as Jesus, he was led out to die, many mourned for him. But Jesus, as they mourned, he turned to them and he said, verse 28, have a look at verse 28 at the bottom there. Jesus turned and said to them, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, weep for yourselves and your children. For the time will come when you will say, blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. It's as if Jesus is saying, I'm going to die. But there is a far worse judgment to come. You see, if we remain in a position of rejecting Jesus, Jesus says it would be better for mountains to fall on us, to crush us, than to be at the receiving end of his judgment. But that is not what Jesus wants for us. Let's be clear on that. It is not what Jesus wants for us. Jesus wants to save us from that judgment. That's why he didn't save himself on the cross, but rather died, paying the price of our sin. That divine swap. So what do we do? What do we need to do if we have not yet accepted Jesus as our King? Just like that second criminal, we need to fear God. We need to recognize God for who God is. We need to have a correct view of God. Just like that second criminal, we need to admit our guilt, that by nature we have been rejecting God. We need to have a correct view of ourselves. And then we need to turn to King Jesus. King Jesus, remember me. There is nothing more awesome than knowing the certainty of paradise when we die. Do you know that for yourself? Do you know that when you die, you will go to heaven? Not just hope it, but know it. Jesus died to make that possible. The certainty of paradise. That is why he died. If you haven't yet, please do accept Jesus as your King. Let's close with a prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for your Son's death on the cross. Thank you that he chose to save others rather than himself. Lord, may each of us choose to accept your Son as our King rather than remain rejecting him. And thank you that by accepting Jesus as our King, which many of us here have done, thank you that by accepting him as our King, we can know the certainty of paradise when we die. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.